Thanks to our sponsor, this episode of Crazy Fitness Got a Healthy Living podcast was created using Podcastle. Podcastle is truly the easiest way to start your podcast. You can record remote interviews in studio quality sound. Editing is a breeze with a super intuitive and user-friendly audio editor. You can take advantage of their powerful AI tools like Magic Dust to optimize audio levels and remove background noise with just a single click. And I also use Podcastle to automatically transcribe my episodes, which not only lets me share the final transcript with all of you, my listeners, on different channels, but it even allows me to use their text editor to clean up any of the episode content I don't like. And I'll correspondingly edit the audio accordingly. Podcastle is amazing, all-in-one platform to create your podcast or any audio and video content. Give it a try at podcastle.ai. That is podcastle.ai. Did you know Crazy Fitness Guy is not backed by any corporate company and is just a one-person show? Well, there's this term around the podcasting community called indie podcasters. I'm an independent podcast creator. So because I'm not backed by a huge big corporate company, well, if I run out of money and everything else, Crazy Fitness Guy would no longer exist. No website, no podcast, no nothing. If you want to help support the show and keep our lights on, consider becoming a premium podcast member of Crazy Fitness Guy's premium podcast. You get behind-the-scenes access, early access to shows, private Discord server, and premium Discord roles, and exclusive behind-the-scenes access. Plans start at $3.99 a month or $30 a year.
Get ready to unleash your inner awesomeness with the Crazy Fitness Guy Show. Hosted by Jimmy Clare, renowned professional keynote speaker, podcaster, and autism advocate, this show is all about embracing what makes us unique. Join Jimmy as he shares inspiring stories, experiences, and expertise to motivate and educate. Make sure you follow our show so you never miss a brand new episode. Now let's dive into the show.
Welcome to another episode of the Crazy Fitness Guy Show / Weekly Motivation with Crazy Fitness Guy. Before we get started, I'll worry about that later. Before we get started, I have to say, did you know that the people in the neurologist office I went to yesterday, well, let's just say they held a special place somewhere, because holy moly, trying to get an appointment, non-existent. It's like, you need a referral. And it's like, I called your office 12 times and now you tell me I need a referral. And it's like, and the reason why they couldn't get back to me, because they were watching movies on their phone.
Oh, geez. Sorry to hear that.
I'm like, perfect. Love it. Yeah. I think they need to get their own brains checked out. They have one. I'm not going to name any names, but yay. Yeah, that was my day yesterday. I'm like, what else can go wrong this week?
We all have weeks like that, don't we?
Yep. I love those weeks. But welcome, Dr. Ryan, for coming to the show.
No, thank you so much for having me.
So before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, how you got started, and why you got started?
Yeah, of course. So again, Ryan Williamson, I'm a board-certified neurologist. I'm the owner and founder of Transcend Health and author of my new book, The Incredible Brain, which actually comes out September 9th. So pretty excited about that because we're right around the corner. But before I did any of that, we kind of go back to the early years of my life. I witnessed a lot of suffering, and this was, at the time, I really didn't fully appreciate where this would, I guess, send me or what it would do, but lost a lot of people I was close with when I was young, and that certainly turned some early gears in terms of, you know, how I questioned what life meant, why people died or why did bad things happen. So that pushed me into a career in medicine. And it really wasn't until I finished my medical training, or I became a neurologist, because the brain certainly is fascinating. I'm sure we'll get into that at some point here soon. But once I got into clinical practice, you know, Jimmy, your story actually hits the nail on the head, because I felt like I couldn't provide the care that I wanted to my patients. And, you know, Western medicine is very siloed. It's very reactive. We don't really have a healthcare system. We have a sick care system. And, you know, doctors are trained to treat their tiny little corner of the body. And even in many cases, they subspecialize. So within neurology, we have people that just do stroke or just do headache. And, you know, it's like that in the surgical subspecialties everywhere else. So that system produces world-class experts, but it doesn't do a whole lot for keeping people healthy, because doctors are paid to really solve the problem that's in front of them, not necessarily keep people in a healthier state. And again, for what I do, I mean, I see a lot of people that suffer from conditions like Alzheimer's, which is the most common type of dementia, strokes, where part of the brain dies due to a blood clot in the wrong place, or even worse problems like brain death. And it took me a while to figure this out, but so many of these problems are so preventable, and very few people are talking about how they're preventable, why they're preventable, and what we can do to actually avoid them in 90%+ of cases, which is what the medical literature shows us. So the last few years, I've been on this journey to help educate my patients and my clients through my coaching practice, and just get this message out to as many people as I can, which is part of why I wrote the book and part of why I'm on your podcast. So that's kind of the Cliff's Notes version. We can go in any direction you want after that.
Well, I definitely want to read your book, because I'm interested in about the brain as well, especially when I come across some people who might not have a brain. I'm not going to name any names. My insurance company. And I'm in fight with two of them currently, which is very fun. But I want to ask you a quick question, and I'm going to detour on this, a slight little detour on this, but I want to ask you, so hypothetically, I don't know the exact numbers off the top of my head, and I don't have them in front of me, just being honest and transparent. So this is going to be a wordy question a little bit. So I don't know how much med school costs just for a primary care doctor, let alone a neurologist and all the other specialty kind of doctors. But so my question is going, so obviously there's some type of doctor on their insurance side company to just deny. But I was curious, they might be a knowledge in a few areas, like they might have read a book about something and whatnot, but and you might not know this answer, but let's just say hypothetically, if somehow somebody knew everything, had a degree in every little specialty out there, like I said, hypothetically, because I haven't met somebody like that, but just saying, hypothetically, if they went to every single schooling degree for every single doctor's degree out there, for every specialty out there, just so that they can work in insurance and whatnot, wouldn't they be pretty much in a couple of $1 million in debt?
Yeah, it's a good question. So kind of a multi-part question here, if I heard you right, Jimmy. But to answer the first part, you know, whether you ultimately become a surgeon or a family doctor, primary care, neurologist, everybody that goes through 4 years of medical school through the traditional Western route, which is to become an MD like me, or a DO, or something equivalent, that's 4 years of medical school in the United States. And that, whether you're at you're an in-state student at a state university, or you're maybe out of state versus going to a private school. Gosh, anymore. I mean, that tuition can be $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, or maybe even approaching $100,000 a year, depending on where you are, not including living expenses and materials, et cetera. So Yes, medical education is very expensive. I was in the Navy for about 12 years, which is something I always wanted to do. And one of the incentives for me to go through that training was to have the military pay for medical school. That's certainly not the only reason I commissioned, but that was, again, that's sort of part of the agreement and that contract. But if you were to go through multiple residencies, which is what happens after you go through 4 years of medical school, neurology takes 4 years, for example, internal medicine, family medicine, 3 years, and the neurosurgery, for example, is a 7-year training after medical school. It's very lengthy. You can very quickly get into a multi-decade training pathway where, yes, you might be acquiring relevant skills and certainly always learning, but the practicality of recouping some of that investment, to your point, I mean, if somebody has a multi six-figure student loan burden and they're, making maybe, $50,000-$60,000 a year as a resident, which is fairly average pay depending on where you are throughout the country, which is fairly equivalent depending on what you do. So, i.e. a family doctor and a neurosurgeon don't make that, their training pay is not much different, even though their attending pay when they're fully trained and board certified after could be quite different. Sort of a loaded question in a lot of different directions, but yes, you could very easily rack up a ton of debt if you were going through all these different educational programs and systems, or maybe you got a master's in public health, or maybe you wanted to go to law school. I mean, that could be very expensive in a hurry. And if you weren't actively working toward, paying off that debt or generating an income, that could be a problem. And then back to the insurance, I think you also bring up a really important point here. This is back to this whole issue that we have with our sick care system, is that insurance companies are for profit. So, by definition, they cover people, quote unquote, for their healthcare needs, and everybody pays into a giant pool of funds that the insurance company goes and invests and tries to make some money on that money. And by definition, they're trying to pay out as little as possible to keep as much profit as they can, right? That's how the game works. And ideally, they're helping people along the way that need financial assistance through their insurance. Well, if we zoom out from that, because I don't think that's a great model in general, maybe it's necessary, maybe it's one of the better models we have, but if we keep people healthier and we keep them out of the hospital more and we keep them out of a clinic more or out of an emergency department or wherever, there's a lower burden on the insurance companies so that there's more capital or more funds reserved for people that need the more emergent treatments, rather than kind of chasing our tail on problems that are preventable in the first place. So there is, I suppose, a more systemic or even financial reason that I'm doing this, to try to just help educate people on how to take better care of themselves, because that does free up more money and more resources for people to go see a neurologist sooner and not have a long wait list, or to not have to fight with insurance companies that are really trying to claw back every dollar that's in the pool of their funds.
Well, the reason why I asked that question was because when I learned about that there's a doctor in every single insurance company, my thought is like, they can't be a possible expert on everything. It's like, you might have read a book on something, but it doesn't mean you're an expert. And it's like, there's a person, yeah, you might have read something about neurology, but you're not a neurologist. You can't possibly be everything. And if you can possibly be everything, then you must be like freaking Google or something. But, and I'm not saying you personally, I just mean the doctor and the insurance company, because like, there's no possible way. And it's like, you would have to be like in like a couple $1 million in debt. And I was like, well, it sucks to be you, but again, not you personally. I mean, just that person over there, but.
Yeah, no, of course. Well, and so in my experience, physicians that work for insurance companies tend to be more, generalists, meaning they're maybe internal medicine trained, where they've got a very broad array of conditions that they're familiar with. But no, I mean, by definition, they can't. I mean, none of us can be an expert in everything. Our brains are amazingly complex, but they don't quite work that well. So it is frustrating to be in a situation where people are denied coverage or care, because they're at the limitation or the mercy of, you know, of a provider somewhere who denies a prior authorization, which is a common process to, you know, have a reimbursement approved. But I will say that, again, back to that baseline level of education that every doctor has, because they go through that training pipeline, while they may not know the specifics or the ins and outs of every nuanced disease, they have the framework within which to think and understand. If they were to go look up, person A comes in with this condition and, you know, they've got this diagnosis and they need these treatments, or, you know, they've failed first, second, third line therapy, and now they need to be approved for something else. You know, they should be able to think their way through that logically, you know, rather than needing to be a quote unquote expert on that specific condition, because again, that would be very difficult. And that opens up another interesting path of discussion. I don't know how much you or your audience follow the trends in AI, but, you know, we are almost at a point where, you know, these large language models are good enough to be able to do most of that heavy lifting and act as every expert in the room, because of the vast amount of information that it's trained on and the general processing power of these models. They're not perfect yet, and certainly in healthcare, I still think they have a ways to go, but they're getting there very, very quickly. And again, there may even be some models that I'm unaware of that are probably already there, whether they're released or not. But I think we're headed there in short order as far as that being a big tool, and certainly on the patient care front, but, you know, maybe even to be utilized by insurance companies.
Well, you know, honestly, it's funny that you brought up the AI, because I had someone else on here who was also a doctor said that AI is right now is in favor of the insurance companies and ruling in their favor all the time. And it's like, we got to train it to be in our favor. And I like that guy's thinking, because it's like, I'm not saying like on every little nook and cranny, but I said to someone, tongue in cheek kind of joke, but also some truth behind it. If I had to pick between my two insurance companies, mental health one and the regular health one, and pick between those two and AI, I would literally choose AI as my health insurance provider, because at least, you know, even if it rejected something right off the bat, at least it would show some remorse, where the insurance company has no feeling whatsoever. And I know it's just a person relaying a message on the phone and whatnot, but it's like, well, at least AI has some, like, oh, I'm sorry you feel that way, versus insurance is like the stone cold, pretty much like serial killer type cold.
Well, Jimmy, I'm certainly sorry to hear you've had that experience. And again, I think you bring up another interesting point, in that, in kind of a faceless, nameless organization, you know, certainly organizations don't have feelings, you know, but people should. But as we're training AI, you know, they're becoming better and better at mimicking human behavior. But there's a real debate around, you know, consciousness, around to what degree does a large language model become an entity that it could generate its own thoughts, you know, or have its own feelings. Certainly, by definition, you know, an AI can't have human feelings, because it is not, in fact, human, but it can emulate them very well. And that's I've come across some interesting conversations with people that, you know, where humans are interacting with AI and developing sort of this, you know, one-way relationship where they feel attached to this computer, or this agent, because they believe that the machine is, you know, providing companionship, or maybe even loving them back, and that we're in a very interesting, you know, paradigm there as far as what that means for the world. So there's a lot of directions we could go with that, but anyway, we have some new puzzles in front of us, to say the least.
Yeah. I'm not going to name any names, but I had some people said around me that I was like, yeah, you know, maybe he can't get any girlfriends and whatnot, he's going to have an AI girlfriend. And I was like, I can't comment on that. I don't think you want my comment on that. So I'm just going to keep my mouth shut.
There, it was, I was 5 or maybe 10 years ago. There's a movie with Joaquin Phoenix called Her. Did you ever see that?
No.
I've seen bits and pieces of it. I've never watched it all the way through, but I think it's a prescient movie because he plays this human who I believe falls in love with an AI or an assistant. And it's kind of goes through what is that like? And you know, that seemed like science fiction in 2015 or 2016. I forget when the movie came out. It wasn't that long ago. But now these are potential real world problems that people are facing, which is just interesting.
What's the movie called again?
I believe it's called Her, H-E-R. You look up Her, Joaquin Phoenix, that should pull it up.
I'm definitely going to look that up because that piqued my interest. I'm not going to get any sick ideas, but I'm not that crazy.
Please don't.
So I was curious. So why do you find the brain so interesting? And before I have you answer that, I think for me, what I find interesting about the brain is that, well, from my own autistic point of view, having to think outside the box, my brain sees in patterns, and I kind of like to think that, I think higher than people, but sometimes I see the smallest details. Like, for instance, I spotted something when I was traveling to Florida for a conference, and I noticed on the boarding passes on mobile devices, if you add it to your wallet, like Apple Wallet or Google Wallet, it doesn't show you the group number that you're supposed to board with. I'm like, you would think somebody would test that out. And it's like, come on, developers, $1 billion industry, you can't get somebody good? Come on. It's like, this is amateur hour. Anyway, that's my soapbox. But so that's why I find the brain interesting, because it's like, I think different. I know everybody thinks all differently and everything, but I like to see how nitpicky my brain is and see that small little details. Like sometimes my parents get like, kind of think it's like kind of ridiculous. Like, Jimmy, you really had to spend so much time on the small details. It's like, not in little every nook and cranny, but I can tell when something is off, like the boarding pass stuff and whatnot. It was like something a smidge off, like in an image. I was like, you know what? It's not going to bother me. But it was just something like as basic as the group stuff. It's like, oh, come on, that's supposed to be basic.
Yeah. Well, again, Jimmy, you ask great questions and you bring up some very interesting topics. For me, I think the brain is easily the most fascinating organ in the human body. There may be some of my other specialist colleagues would disagree. I mean, nephrologists get pretty wound up about the kidney and cardiologists like the heart. And we can't live without critical organs, but, you know, without our brain, we can't experience what it means to be human.
Without a brain, we'd be zombies.
Exactly. Exactly. So we can't, I mean, that gets, you know, this gets into the philosophy of life and consciousness and meaning and humanism and, you know, behavior, all kinds of interesting topics. But the brain is the place where we make sense of the natural world around us. So your brain is this giant supercomputer, and it processes all of the millions of bits of sensory information that are streaming into it every second. It gets about 11 million bits every second is what your brain actually receives. Although what's interesting is the number of bits that can only make it to your level of conscious perception is on the order of like 50 bits a second. So it's a very, very small amount that we can actually focus our attention on. But I say all that to say that it's very nuanced. It's incredibly special. It's trainable, so you can modify it throughout your life depending on what you do with it, or you know, what you read, or what podcast you're on, or where you travel, or what you eat. So it's this plastic or sort of flexible organ, and you're right. I mean, every brain is different, and everybody in their life circumstances and the differences in their neural architecture, their structure, what their experiences have been, their education, all arrive at different conclusions and generate different behavioral outputs that make us all unique. And people that have autism in particular, or they're on the autism spectrum, have a different brain than other people. And so to your point, you know, you are very good at noticing specific details that the average person probably wouldn't even, you know, recognize if you asked them 10 times. And I find that interesting, because neurology in particular is a very nuanced field, and it pushes a lot of doctors away, because a lot of doctors don't really like it, quite frankly. So there's some job security for me, I guess. But I don't think this has ever been studied. This is pure conjecture on my part, just an anecdotal observation. So please take that, you know, with a grain of salt. But it appears to me that neurology tends to attract more people on the autism spectrum and people with, say, Asperger's, for example, that go through medical school, because of the particularities and because of the kind of nuances, for whatever reason. I've just made this observation my entire career. No matter where I go or what hospital I work in, it just tends to attract that kind of person, which is interesting. But, you know, think about, I mean, look at Elon Musk, right? I mean, he's taken a lot of political heat lately for, you know, the election cycle and the Doge thing and whatever. But, I mean, forget about that for a minute. He's arguably the most successful, if not one of the most successful people on the planet or to have ever lived. And he has a very particular way of viewing the world and solving problems that most other people don't. And he has Asperger's. And his brain is wired very differently than the average person. And he has gotten very good at making optimal use of that, which I think is just a fascinating case study of how an autistic brain, excuse me, is different than a non-autistic brain. For what that's worth.
I mean, one thing I've also, I mean, even though I find the brain fascinating, I couldn't go into school for it, for science and whatnot, because me and science do not work together. And I'm currently in my final class for my associate's degree, which I had to take for science. It's just science, but I'm taking the very most basic science whatsoever, only because I'm not in a science major whatsoever. But I do find it interesting, which says a lot from my point of view, because growing up in public school, we did nothing, I mean, except for I think 7th grade and 8th grade science class, we got to do different kinds of experiments. But in high school, everybody's like, I basically hyped it up so much. It's like, oh, you got to do cool experiments. I must have been in the lamest science class in high school, because we didn't do squat. The only thing we got to do was, and for anybody who's listening to this, if you're eating, you might not want to eat after this, or listen to this part, or make sure you allow yourself enough room to digest what you're eating, because what I'm going to say right now is totally disgusting, and I don't mean to sound totally disgusting. Luckily, I have not eaten my lunch yet, but so if you puke later on, please don't blame it on me. So there's the warning for you. So the only thing that we did in one of my high school science classes as an experiment, we melted the fat off of Cheetos. And it was pretty cool and gross at the same time. And it stunk up the whole hallway for the whole rest of the semester, for the whole rest of the school year. And I was like, so every time when there was like, there's like three floors to our school, maybe two or three. And so every time when somebody went down the flight of stairs, up the flight of stairs to the, where a lot of the science classrooms were, people were like, oh, what's that smell in the hallway? And it would just remain there. It's just think of the smelliest thing. If you think, I don't know, let's say, someone in your house smells or they don't take a shower. Well, this was beyond that. It was gross, but it was cool that, well, and I can never eat Cheetos ever again.
That sounds pretty gross.
Yeah.
Well, could go a lot of directions with that in terms of kind of how maybe burnt or decomposing flesh smells, but I'll table that as well, to not gross people out further. But you bring up an interesting point about Cheetos, and that, if you look at the ingredients on a bag of Cheetos, I mean, it's like, I don't know the actual number, but call it 30 or 50 ingredients long. And most of those are some version of a processed or an ultra processed molecule or substance.
Sounds
And
tasty.
right. Well, they're back to, kind of doctors being in insurance companies, Frito-Lay or whoever owns Cheetos or Fritos, all the above, maybe it's the same company. They hire these scientists to actually engineer food to taste better and to have palatable texture and to appeal to us. So, people tend to gravitate towards bright colors because that's just how our visual cortexes are designed to, to be attracted to bright items or things like this. Our brain likes different textures, so crunchy, and maybe savory or salty or spicy. So these food companies spend a great deal of time, energy, and money on making these processed foods create this experience that causes your brain to crave more and more of it, so that you're sort of subconsciously addicted to them. And, to your point, when you sort of melt all the fat off and you see what's left, and there's this horrible smell and there's this disgusting looking thing in front of you, that's what you're putting in your body. And there's certainly some emerging data that people who consume ultra processed foods have shorter lifespans, they have a much higher percentage or degree of chronic diseases. And again, they are more likely to end up with these conditions like dementia and strokes that I mentioned earlier, compared with people who just eat a whole food unprocessed diet, which is what we're just designed to eat. So, I think you're probably doing everyone a favor by sharing how gross the Cheeto experience is, because that is certainly not something that we should be consuming, if ever, on a regular basis.
Yeah. To be honest, I used to eat a lot of different Cheetos growing up, but I stopped a long time ago. I mean, I occasionally have a bag of pretzels. I mean, the little small ones. I mean, I get they're high in sodium, but it's not like I have them every single day. It's like, okay, I was at the beach, I was wanting something with my sandwich.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, again, I think this is a kind of a progress over perfection situation, where if for anybody in your audience, if you are somebody who leans on or consumes processed foods regularly, I'd have a plan, I mean, and eliminate one thing at a time. And or even better yet, when you go to the store, think about what you're shopping for, because if something doesn't end up at your house or at home, it's very difficult to eat it. It takes a lot of resistance, or at least a lot more steps, to have to go get in the car, drive to the store, go buy the thing that you're craving. And I suppose we've maybe done ourselves a disservice with instant food delivery services. I mean, whether it's Uber Eats or DoorDash or pick a service, even Walmart and different grocery stores have instant services where they can still drop things off at the door. So that resistance is lowered some, but even still, if you are intentional about what you buy and what you bring home and you leave it in a visible place, and one of my favorite examples of this is, rather than having the bag of Cheetos on the counter in the kitchen, if you have fresh fruit, say an apple or an orange, or maybe you open the fridge and instead of, I don't know, candy or cookies or something, you have vegetable sticks and, maybe some sort of a healthy protein. That's what you're going to eat because that's what's there. And back to that kind of neuroplastic feature of your brain, where your brain rewires itself based on the experiences that you deliver. Most people, when they get over that initial craving or that urge to continue to consume processed foods, when you start to eat a whole food diet and you're giving your body the appropriate micronutrients, which are the little kind of microscopic, vitamins and minerals that actually help run the cellular machinery of your body and all the enzymatic reactions that we need to be healthy. And then the macronutrients, which are like the building blocks and that give us the energy to do the work in the first place. When you're putting the right fuel in your body that you're designed to actually consume, I mean, people feel 1,000 times better I've watched inflammation disappear. I've watched people that have struggled to lose weight their whole life. The pounds melt off like your Cheeto fat. they build muscle. They want to go to the gym. They sleep better. I mean, it's amazing what appropriate nutrition does for people. I mean, it really is striking. And it's crazy to me that we live in a world where, you know, the norm is to just have a box of, you know, Cheetos, Fritos, a box of cookies. I mean, it's like, it's when you actually look at what's on the packaging, it's like, oh my gosh, like, what are we consuming?
Yeah. You know, honestly, and this is not a sponsorship for this company, but, you know, honestly, if you don't really have any time to cook, you don't really want to go to the grocery store a lot, because, I mean, pretty much if you add it all up and like your grocery bill on a weekly basis or monthly basis, you probably could do like HelloFresh. I mean, even if you don't want to do the cooking part of it, you could, like, they have prepared meals now. And I mean, everything is it's not even frozen meals. It's already cooked for you. They put it in the box with ice around it, so, you know, it's fresh. It's not like, oh yeah, it's frozen from the grocery store, and you have all the additives and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I looked either HelloFresh or Home Chef or whatever. I mean, if you had, it can look pricey at first, but if you think about going to a grocery store these days with, let's say, if you have a family of, I don't know, 2 or 3. And it could be like anywhere $300, $400, $500 something. Well, gee, what if you got a couple of those meals? You don't have to make anything, save yourself time, save yourself gas. Again, I'm not saying go do it. I'm just saying, if you're like me, I'm like, okay, you know, I go to karate 3 to 4 times a week. I run my business. If I'm going to do any cooking, I'm probably going to do it on the weekend. I'm not going to go do it during the week. And I'm also in college. So it's like, yeah, what am I going to cook? I could. Some of my friends said, like, well, you could cook everything on the weekend. Oh, yeah, I'm going to make at least 3 things before on the weekend, make a big, huge mess and package it all up. And yeah, realistically, how realistic is that going to be for me? None, because of the free time I want to have, and the only time I have literally is on the weekends. You think I'm going to cook? Not at all.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think you bring up a great point in that having a meal delivery service provides a great convenience. And again, it's back to lowering that resistance for people. So rather than having to, like you said, get in the car, burn the gas, drive to the store, buy the things, come back, unpackage, chop up, mix, cook, prepare, and then eat. It's a lot of steps. And that's, you know, just to have something show up at your door is incredibly convenient. I guess I would just encourage you and your listeners in particular to vet whatever the source is. So meaning, you know, I don't, HelloFresh versus any of the other companies, I've not vetted any of these. I'm aware of them. I haven't used them as a service. Blue Apron, that's another one I've heard of. But anyway, in either case, make sure that you know, again, what you're getting and what you're putting in your body. Because if you can't verify the source of a product and you don't know that it's truly organic, you know, that it's in line with whatever your dietary needs or considerations are, that can potentially cause problems. And again, depending on everyone's budget and where they live and their access to quality nutrition, you know, the cost of a service like that can be prohibitive for some people. So again, depending on where you live, you know, there are local farmers markets, where, you know, people, you can verify that farmers are actually organically harvesting their crops. And so you're buying direct rather than having to, you know, pay for shipping and to buy through a store or something like that. So there are economical ways that you can make sure that you're getting quality food, that may be, again, more affordable, maybe minus some of the convenience. But again, the delivery services, I'm sure they've made it priced competitively enough for the right people that it works, or else they wouldn't have a business model.
Yeah. And like I said to everybody listening, I'm not like telling you go do it. And I'm just saying, just like, if it makes sense, makes sense. And I mean, I used to get the frozen meals from the grocery store. And then when I found out there's so many additive ingredients, it's like, oh, what's this word? And when I looked it up, and I mean, I'm not even going to give you an example of the word I looked up. And I was like, oh, that's what that is. That's tasty. I mean, I promise I'm not going to gross everyone out again, but I mean, when I looked at it, it was like, oh, you know, sometimes it's not nice to look at things on Google. This is like, this is just, oh. And I think one time when I did that, I even threw up in my back of my mouth a little bit. It's like, yep, I'm done.
Yeah, I cringe when I think about my lack of knowledge of nutrition when I was younger. I'll never forget when I was in high school. I took advanced placement biology, so I always enjoyed science, which is again part of what got me into medical school. But I had AP Bio third period, and we had this small break in between first and second period, and I'd always go to the same vending machine in my high school, and I would buy a Mountain Dew Code Red and this big Texas cinnamon bun, which had like the absolute worst combination of sugar and food coloring and processed chemicals that you could possibly imagine. So God knows what I was doing to my body. But anyway, I'd knock all this stuff back, and then I couldn't stay awake in class because, you know, my glucose would probably spike to who knows what, and then I would have this massive insulin release, and so I'd tank. I'd always fall asleep in class and have no clue why. Now thankfully I was competitive rower in high school, so I was very active, so the calories were gone by the end of the day. But I just think of the actual quality of some of that stuff. I'm like, oh my God, what was I doing to myself?
And don't get me wrong, I still have the occasional ice cream here and there. Not much from, not anything from the store. Not rarely from the store, and rarely from an ice cream parlor. I mean, I like dessert, but if I'm gonna have something, it has to be something I can't get easily.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and again, back to what I was saying about progress over perfection. I think it's okay to allow yourself to have a treat every now and then to celebrate doing well. But you know, this should be the vast majority of what anybody focuses on again for their nutrition, which again impacts your performance. I mean, like me with my Mountain Dew and my big Texas cinnamon bun or whatever it was, honey bun. Not a great performance enhancer, as it turns out. You know,
Ah,
but if you were,
damn.
no, yeah, but if you were to have a bowl of like oats or maybe Greek yogurt, and a quality fruit or some fiber, I mean, that can really provide sustained energy for a period of time. Healthy fats, I mean, like a piece of salmon, or have an egg that's got some protein. I mean, there's so many better choices that can appropriately fuel your body to help you with performance at your job, or if you're a student, or like you, going to school and running a business and going to karate and being physically active. And again, I mean, at your age, maybe mine, we tend to think about these things less, but the process of aging starts the moment you are born. Actually, you could argue that it starts before we're born. Once we start forming as a little, kind of fetus or blastocyst or whatever stage we want to talk about, but we age the moment we are created, and there are things that speed that up, and there are things that slow that down. And certainly eating processed and ultra processed foods, not being physically active, dealing with increased levels of stress, not sleeping well, not eating the right stuff, so on and so forth, those all accelerate premature aging in the body. And it's not always visible, which is really a funny thing to think about, because these mechanisms take place within our cells, and we can't see that because it's microscopic. And it's only until we hit a threshold where a new symptom shows up, where an organ system starts to fail, or God forbid, a tumor grows, or whatever happens, that this stuff starts to go haywire. And at that point, it's not that things are irreversible, but it's way easier to maintain a healthy system while it's still operating at top function than to try to catch it, once the wheels have come off the wagon, so to speak.
So I was curious, and I was curious about this. How I've heard some people say that you should not eat while watching TV or reading, because then your brain signals like, oh, I want to keep eating and whatnot. What is your thoughts about that?
Well, I think it's less about eating during a certain activity and more about eating, being intentional about what you eat, how much you eat, and then when. And the reason I say that is that if you are eating, if you're consuming a whole food diet, it is very difficult to overeat. And what I mean by that is that, say you have, like, take I, my lunch today was a mixed salad that has all kinds of mixed greens, peppers, tomatoes, red onion, avocado, pistachios, broccoli, sprouts. I mean, it's a whole mix of stuff in there. And then I put some fresh organic olive oil because actually there's some evidence that that lowers your risk of dementia and has some healthy polyphenols in there that help as antioxidants. So when I eat that, and then maybe I'll do like a bowl of Greek yogurt for a little extra protein after, like I am full for hours. And it is very difficult for me to want to consume anything after, because when we look at, back to these things I was saying that accelerate or slow down aging, those are called the hallmarks of aging. And one of the hallmarks of aging is a deregulated nutrient sensing system. And if you can't appropriately sense nutrients coming into your body, or you don't have adequate fiber to help your gut feel full, you're actually not getting the appropriate signals from your brain and from your gut that you've actually consumed enough. And if you crack open a tin of Oreo, and tin or whatever, a tray of Oreos, excuse me, or maybe a tin of Pringles, there we go, there's a tin can or something, the little tennis ball looking thing that they come in, you can plow through those in a hurry because they are very calorically dense, but they're nutrient poor. And so your body's not getting the feedback to say, hey, I've had enough calories or I've had enough stuff. And very quickly you've overeaten, and now you've got this problem where your body just thinks, all right, well, we got lucky and we got more calories than we need. We're going to store that for a rainy day, which was a great survival system, back when we were hunter-gatherers. And maybe you came upon a rabbit or maybe a deer and could eat what you could, right, while it was there, until you had to walk another couple days to go find food again. So, our ancestors regularly went days without a time, without a meal, but they were able to store fat. They could then their bodies could burn as energy. We inherited those mechanisms, but we have food abundance like we've never had in our culture. So all we have to do is, reach for another handful of Cheetos. And you don't have to go walk for 2 days to go to Costco or to go find the next thing. So, I think it's less about, are you reading or are you watching TV? It's more about, are you putting the right thing in your body to again work with how we're designed rather than to work against it? Because it's really easy to overeat and overdo it otherwise.
I think it also has to do, I think it, and from my point of perspective, Dave, I can even talk, holy crap. I think from my point of view, I think it's also due to all the food commercials on TV and where he was like, oh, where can I get that right now? And I think that's why I don't really eat much TV at the same time much anymore. I mean, if I'm on vacation, yeah, I treat myself. But if it's like, yeah, TV turning me, I'm bored.
Yeah, sure. So again, back to the kind of the scientists that make the foods taste healthy, or taste healthy, goodness, taste good, because they're very unhealthy processed foods, the being they hire marketers too to make an experience of whatever it is that they're getting people to buy or consume to be enjoyable. I mean, think of the leprechaun on the Lucky Charms commercial and how much fun the kids are having eating Lucky Charms, right?
And it's magically delicious.
There you go, right? Or Tony the Tiger with "They're Great" or whatever we grew up with listening to. Again, that's marketing to try to get kids or people or anybody to buy the, or, the parents to buy these products because it creates a desire to consume them, which to me is quite frankly insane. I think we should just be educating people on how to fuel our bodies and what works the best.
So I was curious, how can people rewire their brain to not be tempted so much at certain things like eating unhealthy stuff and replacing it with something else?
There are a handful of techniques, Jimmy, and I do get into a lot of these in the Incredible Brain, and I talk about this a lot in my company, Transcend Health, with my clients. So if anybody's interested, again, our website is transcendhealthgroup.com. Be more than happy to share more there. But kind of as a broad brushstrokes overview, anything you can do to maintain agency or control over your choices will help. And what I mean by that is that you want to maintain control or regulation over the choices you make rather than being a passenger and being controlled by the external world. And when you, again, crack open your Fritos and you reach for one and your brain gets this signal that this is savory or spicy or crunchy, or it's bright, you know, whatever, that's this overstimulation that creates this feedback loop of reward. And you reach for more, you reach for more, reach for more. And the more you do that, the more you're actually rewiring your brain around anticipating that same reward in the future, or at least similar rewards. And it's very easy to break that cycle with a series of interventions. And again, I talk about that a lot with my audience about how to do this. But I mean, meditation, breath work, different types of exercise, quality sleep, you know, choosing the right nutrition. Getting around like-minded people that do the same thing. There's a whole just array of ways we can do this, all of which independently can help increase that agency and that control.
Those seem like helpful tips. My last few questions for you is, do you think there, how many people do you think realistically want to improve their brains versus, I'll just eat whatever I want and, oh well.
That's a good question. Yeah, I think most people don't realize how conditioned we've become to the external, or to, you know, how many people have really lost control of you know where they are. But I think more people are waking up to it. At least that's been my observation. And you know, I think again, as the saying goes, you're a reflection of the five people you spend the most time around. You know, as we start to see more communities and more groups of people wake up and take control and just live a healthier, better, more intentional life, that has a very positive, contagious effect, you know, among different groups of people and sort of being able to model behavior after those that have actually done it. So I you know, as far as a percentage of the population, I would say probably most people haven't quite gotten there yet. At least, again, when we look at the statistics on metabolic health and weight and blood pressure and all these things. But I'm very optimistic that it doesn't take much to turn the tide and get us back to where we need to be.
I know for myself, sorry. I know for myself, one of the things I like to do, even if it's something quick, well, not like quick, I mean, depends on how good you are at it. I like to do word searches. And some people might say, word searches, Jimmy. I was like, how can that be good for the brain? I was like, well, interesting enough, it's like when you're looking for words diagonally, backwards, forwards, keeps your brain on your tippy toe, well, metaphorically tippy toes, and kind of helps you think outside of the box. Like, where can I find this? And ironically, I've done a couple so far. I mean, I got a reading app that has it in. That includes it in the app, so I didn't have to download something else, another one, can't remember the word I was going to look for, but just one functional app for one thing. It also includes different puzzles, and it's just kind of cool. I like multifunction kind of apps because it's like, oh, wait, if I want to do a actual puzzle, I have to download another app or use or make a mess of some other room in my house to do a puzzle. It's not that I'm lazy, but I just like, Yeah, I got 20 minutes somewhere versus I have to dump all the pieces out. Hopefully I don't lose a piece, and hopefully my dogs doesn't eat a piece.
Right. Yeah, no, the brain likes puzzles, and anything that challenges the brain or increases what we call the cognitive load, the more it preserves function and again helps maintain a healthy brain from here forward.
Yeah. So my last question for you is, where can people follow you, find you, learn more about who you are and what you do? And part two to that question, haha, you think I was gonna be done? Where can people find your book and buy your book, etc.?
Yeah, well, thanks, Jimmy. So, again, our website is transcendhealthgroup.com. And we can provide that certainly for your show notes. If you get there, that'll link you anywhere. But the book title is The Incredible Brain. That's probably easier to type out, but if you just search for that, it's on Amazon, Barnes Noble, pretty much most bookstores will have it. So that releases September 9th. So we're 6 days away. Very excited about that. Although maybe it should be out by the time this episode's live. Or we are live. There we go. Yeah, that's right. So yeah, the Incredible Brain, you can search it. And otherwise transcendhealthgroup.com. That'll link to all of our social media and everywhere else.
Awesome. I'm definitely going to check out that book because, well, let's just say, wink, wink. I had some gift card money from Barnes and Noble, so I was like, yeah, I'm going to go buy the damn book right now.
I appreciate your support, Jimmy. That's awesome.
I mean, I'm going to do it, because I mean, I always like to learn new things. Well, it actually depends on what the new thing is. If you, I'll give you an example real quick. It is this huge, big automation process that I'm making for my business. Well, I'll just say I have hit so many different roadblocks, and it's like, why won't you make them work? That's just gets annoying after a while because, like, oh, come on, I already done it, figured this crap out. This supposed to just been working. But nah. But yeah, that's the only thing I get annoyed when I have to do the same thing over and over again. It's like, if something breaks once in a blue moon, it's like, okay, crap happens. But when it's the same crap that over and over again, I'm just like, can I give AI the biggest middle finger that there possible can, because I'm actually using a ChatGPT to help me think outside the box on how to do X, Y, and Z. And sometimes it gives me really great answers, and sometimes it's just like it gives me the same thing over and over again. It's like, why won't you freaking work, you little bastards? But that's my rant. But thank you for being a guest on the show, and I would love to have you back on in the future.
Appreciate you, Jimmy. Thank you for having me.
Well, bye for now.
Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Crazy Fitness Guy Show. If you enjoyed this episode, this leave us a review so more people can find us. In the meantime, use the links in the show notes to subscribe to our monthly newsletter, shop for swag, read blog posts, watch videos, and listen to the latest episodes. In the meantime, visit crazyfitnessguy.com to see what we are up to in between episodes. In the meantime, stay healthy, stay safe, and stay motivated.
Hydro Flask is the best water bottle in my opinion because it keeps my water nice, cold, and refreshing throughout the day. And yes, I do drink a lot of water throughout the day, so even though it stays long, colder for longer, I still like having a reusable water bottle like Hydro Flask because it just sits on my desk and it just sits on my desk and reminds me, hey, you gotta drink water. And Hydro Flask, it keeps it cold longer, which makes me want to drink more water throughout the day because, there's nothing worse than drinking warm water. Yeah. Go to hydroflask.com and use the link in the show notes. And yes, I do get a small commission from Hydro Flask, so, which also helps support the show. So tell them I sent you, use the link below. And yeah, check out hydroflask.com for more information.